Good morning, everybody. It's Friday, October 4th. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, our last show the first week of October. It's a pleasure to have you here with us, and if you're listening on the archives, we appreciate that. We archive every show at our website, where we always put a new schedule up, usually on Saturdays. This week, we're going to do it on Sunday, because I'll be away, and it's at education-talkradio.org. Please check out our magazine. My good guest, Howie Knopf, has written for it. It's called Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity, AC&E, at ace-ed.org. It is a very big journal. We got the back-to-school issue up on site. It's an online journal, and it's at ace-ed.org. And believe me, you will enjoy it and the website that surrounds it. Just a subscribe button. It costs nothing to subscribe. We'll get it to you every time it comes out. This year it's quarterly. Next year it's six times a year. We're looking forward to more articles from Howie. And today's show with Dr. Howie Knopf. Hello, Howie. It's Larry. How are you?
Well, good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. I'm Friday at TGIF, as we like to say. It's a pleasure to end the week with you, such a good friend.
Well, thank you. It's great to be on again.
Well, it's a pleasure, but we got a serious topic to talk about, and the way you're going after this topic is extremely interesting to me. I would say it's a trend because it's important. It's going to stay forever. We call it trauma-informed education, and it has to do with all those kids who have had and how he's going to explain this. Well, the acronym is ACE, like my magazine, unfortunately, but it's an adverse childhood experience in that case. All right? And we're trying to figure out a way to handle this. I've talked to many districts who do it, but Dr. Knopf, who will tell you his background, okay, with Project Achieve, et cetera, all right, wants to be sure that schools are doing it properly. Am I right, Howie? Is that a good way to introduce this?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the background is we need to do this from a school psychological perspective, and as a past president of the National Association of School Psychologists, I think I can bring some insight into the table to do this more effectively in our schools.
Well, let me change that. I know you can bring more insights onto the table. You're that good. I don't
know.
Well, I
appreciate
that. I know it. I mean it. So let's talk about this. You know, the schools everywhere, this is everywhere, every district, they're implementing and they're trying to do their best trauma-sensitive initiatives. Okay, and we all know these ACEs, these adverse childhood experiences, okay? But what does an educator, Howie, need to understand, okay? Or I should say a principal or a superintendent, whoever, need to understand before they get into this?
Well, here's a couple of points. I mean, the first point is I think we've become over-traumatized to trauma, and I think we've become hypersensitive to it. So let's go back to the roots and very quickly talk about what the ACEs is. The ACEs is basically a screening scale that has 10 questions on it, and it originated back in the 1995 to 1997 timeframe, and the ACEs was actually field-tested only in Southern California by an HMO with 17,000 people. And the ACEs questions are only home-related, and they're single questions that relate to emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional neglect, physical neglect, parental separation or divorce, the mother treated at home violently, substance abuse, and mental illness. Now, these are all serious issues, and the ACEs scale has been revalidated over the years with many, you know, really good research studies. But the critical point is that, one, that these are home-based issues. Two, that the scaling of the screening is simply, were these present or not? It doesn't look at, when schools are using this even now, it doesn't look at the intensity of the experience to the student, when the experience occurred. It doesn't look at whether or not there were supports around the student to help with these experiences. Okay, so all of that. So it's not a terrible screening scale, but that's the second point. It's a screening scale that needs to be validated by looking at the individual student to see if the student actually is experiencing emotional trauma. So it's like a blood test, but as we all know, the doctor follows the blood test up with other diagnostic assessments. And what our schools are doing is taking a home-based screening scale. They're assuming that the scale is accurate for individual kids, and they're jumping to intervention. So that's the first kind of overlay to this dilemma.
But what I find interesting about this is that are we looking at a trauma? Are we looking at trauma-informed programs when we talk about a school that are in? And I don't know enough about this. Are they individually based, or are schools implementing a district-wide program? I think that's the question, and I don't know enough about that. I have to ask you that. What do you find?
And honestly, it's all of the above. Schools, again, are implementing these programs, perhaps where they don't need to be implementing these programs. That's, again, another point. But they're implementing them sometimes with vendors who have not validated their programs. So what's happening is all over the country right now, and some of it's occurring down at our state departments of education, they're implementing programs that may not be the most effective programs, and some of the programs that they're implementing haven't been approved by, let's just say metaphorically, the Federal Drug Administration. And so we have around this country all good, well-intentioned people, but people that have entered this market, and they're selling stuff to schools, and the schools are not necessarily getting the social, emotional, and behavioral outcomes. And that's the point. The focus is on the social, emotional, and behavioral outcomes of the students, and what's happening is the schools are not getting those outcomes or getting them as effectively as they could.
So what you're saying, if I could, maybe I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but the way I'm understanding it, okay, is that when a school district purchases, I'll call it a generic social, emotional learning program from a given vendor, okay, although the intent is good, okay, and the program may work generically, it's not necessarily great for every individual kid, and they're assuming it is?
Well, and we just commingled. I mean, you know, a trauma-sensitive program is not necessarily a social-emotional learning program.
Okay, thank you.
Although we have the same issues with the social-emotional learning programs. Okay,
so wait a minute. Let me ask you this then, because you brought up SEL a few minutes ago. Okay. Are there vendors out there? This I did not know. Are there vendors out there selling trauma sensitive programs? This I did not know.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's something I never heard of that. Okay,
yes,
I had no idea that existed.
Yes, there are consulting companies. And again, all good intent.
Of course.
Assume they have their hearts in the right place, but they're selling programs. But the key is this: there is not a psychological foundation to what they are doing in some cases. Not all cases, but in some cases. So they're doing trauma-sensitive life as opposed to – these are kids with social-emotional behavioral issues. These are psychological issues. These are psychoneurological issues. And what some of these vendors and some of the programs that have been actually – you know, brought in by state departments of education, and I worked for one for 13 years. Okay, so I know what happens to the State Department of Ed, okay?
Yep.
But they're bringing in programs that don't have the science to practice foundations. And then here's the next point. Some kids need more intensive services, support strategies, and programs. So even an effective trauma-sensitive program should be multi-tiered. And so some kids are not going to respond because their trauma is so deep-seated. They're not going to respond to, if you will, the tier one intervention.
Howie, you've obviously run into this, and I must ask you, a trauma-sensitive generic program, I'll call it, like the kind we're talking about here, okay, are they school psychologists who have put these together? Who are the people that own these companies? What are they? You're saying they're not getting deep enough into the psychology part of it.
Yeah, it's a diversity of people. I mean, there certainly are school psychologists doing it. There are social workers. I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions on any professional group. I mean, the point is that the schools need to be armed with the science to practice facts, and they need to vet their own programs before they implement them.
Where do they get those facts, Howie? Where do they get that?
Some of the some of the facts are right here on this program. You know, again, from my perspective, I've written, you know, a number of blogs on this. But, you know, there are a lot of good researchers that are doing great work in trauma. And, you know, again, I know it's hard for schools to invest the time and effort, you know, in these kind of things. Okay, but at the same time, they've got to go to the experts, you know, the research to practice people, the people, you know, who have done the work, who have done it on a clinical level, and who can speak to what the science-based elements of a good program are. We've got to do our due diligence. That's the bottom line, Larry. I mean, no school should be investing any amount of time, effort, and money in a program that doesn't work, whether it's an academic program or a trauma-sensitive program.
Agreed. Oh, great. And but we, while we're saying all this, Howie, and I mean this sincerely, and I don't mean it to be funny or anything, again, they have to. We have to point them in a direction where they can know at least, or maybe you can tell me now, what questions do they need to ask, or where
right,
can they get that information?
Here's what I'm happy to do, Larry. Okay, and,
yeah.
And again, if it's okay with you, I will send you a copy of my most recent blog, and honestly, it's an article, okay, that basically disaggregates the science to practice and gives people a first reading on what they need to think about, and you can post
Great.
It anywhere you want.
I'll put it right up with this show in the blog.
Absolutely.
That when people listen to this show, they'll go to it, and I'll also put it up. We'll put it up on the website for AC&E Magazine, ace-ed.org. I'm happy
okay.
to do that. You know that, my friend.
Yep. So there's a start.
Okay. It is a good start. You know, and I have a question for you, Howie. This is interesting. I live in a very rural area of Maine, southwestern Maine. And it's not a rich district by any stretch of the imagination. And I know they have a lot of kids with what we'll call today trauma-informed situations, traumatic situations. And to control them, in many cases, they have to put them, you know, in a quiet room. And a lot of school districts have this, okay?
Right.
Some of them, I don't know if I heard it from here or if I read it somewhere else. One of them was a closet they turned into a quiet room, okay, so the kid could just calm down. What's the word on that? And I want to say it again. Here, you know, again, they don't have a lot of resources. Okay, they're
sure.
trying.
Absolutely.
They think it's the right thing. The kid has to calm down. The kid might be a danger to him or herself or to the other kids in the class. They're trying, all right. But it's obviously not the perfect way. What's going on?
Okay,
the quiet rooms, whatever the hell they call them.
All right, and I'll get to the quiet room. Let me lay a predicate here. I mean,
okay.
The first part of the process is obviously if a student needs quote a quiet room, then we have some element of a problem. We've got to use like a doctor. You know, we've got to use like a doctor or a mechanic or a plumber. We've got to figure out what's going on with this student because the emotionality may simply be a symptom. So, you know, part of this is we can't just assume, oh, it's trauma. I mean, for example, it could be academic frustration. You know, it could be academic frustration. It could be teasing and bullying. It could be a student who's struggling with gender identity, who is dealing with home issues that are not, you know. Okay. So we can't lump it all in the trauma level. So I don't have any issue with using, let's say, the room. But the room, a student who needs the room, that should initiate some kind of fact-finding or, you know, some kind of an assessment process with the counselor, the social worker, the school psychologist, whomever, to try to figure out what is triggering the emotionality. Okay, so that's the first predicate. The second predicate, here are the three keys to helping kids, you know, both in a prevention and an early response level of trauma. Okay, when we actually have it, they have to be emotionally aware. They have to have emotional control skills. And they have to have emotional coping skills or be open to other people helping them to cope. Now, again, the issue is that's not trauma specific. Now we're starting to slide into the social emotional learning. That's what all kids need in terms of emotional self-management. They need to be aware of their emotions and the physiology of their emotions revving up their body. They need to have skills in being able to de-escalate or control the emotions. And then they have to be able to do some level of sustained emotional coping. All right. So a good social-emotional learning program that is psychologically based, and again, I've got one of the top social skills programs on the market, the Stop and Think Social Skills Program. So I'm not just blowing steam here. I know how to do this on a clinical level.
I know
but
you
the
do.
Point
That's
is,
why you're here.
Is if we've got kids that need the room, then it may be we have to start connecting the dots, and maybe they simply don't have the emotional awareness or the emotional control skills or the more long-term emotional coping. All right, now here's the answer to your question.
Yeah.
At face value, I have no issues if kids need some quiet time, if kids need to just be able to leave a setting that is emotionally triggering, go to a quiet room, and so on and so forth, that's fine. But that's not the ultimate goal, Larry. The ultimate goal is, again, to figure out why the emotional issues are triggering, how to do some intervention with the student. And, again, it doesn't have to be deep-seated clinical intervention all the time. But the ultimate goal is for the student to be sitting in his or her seat in the classroom, becoming aware that they're getting emotional, being able to de-escalate. And in essence, the goal is for them to be able to use their classroom seat as the quiet room. So the goal is not letting all the kids go to the quiet room. Ultimately, the goal is to give the kids the skills so that they don't need the quiet room even when they're under conditions of emotionality. They do it in their own seat in the classroom. And that's, again, a missing link across this country. Because the people have been given permission, let the kid go to the quiet room, and not understanding the clinical nature of what we've got to do so that the student doesn't need the quiet room over time.
And Howie, and people are listening, and there's nobody that doesn't agree with you, okay? Because what you're saying is accurate. That goes without saying. The challenges in a school district, okay, how do you find the time and the resources, and people are asking themselves this question, and you've heard this question a zillion times, and as they're listening to you, how do they find the time and the resources to really get this done? And they know they have to. Everybody's got the best of intentions with every kid, you know that, but how do they do that? What do they need to be able to do this?
All right.
Properly?
And here's the beginning of the answer. We know from recent surveys all over the country, we know that most schools are doing some kind of a social-emotional learning program. It may not be the best one. What they call SEL may be, SEL light or whatever. but here's the underlying science. What we're talking about relative to the kids in trauma, and this is what schools are already doing, they may not be doing it at the highest level of effectiveness. We've got to make sure that we've got good relationships and positive school and classroom climate in our schools. We need to do that anyways. I mean, we've been talking about school climate especially. And okay, so that's part of your trauma program. That's part of the trauma program. We've got to teach kids the social-emotional learning skills, not just expose them to it, not just have a discussion about it, but literally teach them the skills like we teach a basketball team. Okay, where we're doing walkthroughs, where we have a playbook and so on. So every school needs to do that and is doing that. They're teaching the kids the fire drill. They're unfortunately teaching kids the active shooter drill. They're teaching the kids how to walk in the hallway and so on. So that's embedded in the program. That's part of your trauma program. We've got to motivate kids to use their skills and hold them accountable for appropriate and especially inappropriate behavior. We've got to be.
Is that a good analogy, a fire drill to this, Howie? Is that a good analogy? I mean, fire drill is just walking appropriate analogy. But this is a long-term thing. Help me out here.
Right.
And we're talking
the
long-term.
The point is, the point, Larry, to your question is the schools are already investing the time in the scientific components, the scientific elements of a good trauma program. They may not need to buy, metaphorically, they may not need to buy a trauma-specific program off the rack. They need to first and foremost look at their foundational program in terms of school discipline, classroom management, and student self-management. So it may be that the time they're investing right now, they've just got to extend it and apply it to kids who are coming from trauma. It's all the same science. We're talking about emotional self-management.
And I have a question for you. Wait. You're saying, you know, school district needs to do that. A school district needs to do this. I agree, of course. Okay. Who needs to do that within a school district? Who's that person?
Or honestly,
who are they?
The academic program interfaces with the social emotional behavioral program. So it's got to, you know, not that it's a top down kind of thing. It's top down and bottom up. But, you know, school climate and the things that we're talking about here, Larry, need to be embedded in every district and school's strategic plan, in their budgeting, in their processing. Because we all know, and you know this more than anyone, Larry, if a student is not feeling safe in school, if a student has issues related to bullies or, you know, they're not interacting appropriately with us. Right. So the social, emotional, and behavioral many times predicts whether or not the kids are going to be academically engaged. So who needs to do it? It's got to be strategically planned and then moved all the way down to the classroom teachers who have to do this in classroom management anyways.
Yes, they do.
To your related service professionals. So the short answer is everyone's got to do this. This has got to be a conscious part of every school system's program. And it is. It is right now.
It is, but we have to do it right. Okay, we really have to do it right because, and Howie, just I think I know the answer to this, but there's harm in doing it wrong. Well, let me ask that question. Is there harm in doing it wrong? Is there real harm?
Well, I mean, one of my kind of mantras is every time you do an intervention with a student and it doesn't work, you potentially make the student more resistant to the next intervention. So there is potential harm because if we're not doing the right things, we may make the student or the staff more resistant to the next intervention. We may, in fact, exacerbate the problem. I mean, I don't want people to get hypersensitive to this and not do anything. But at the same time, it's like, again, going to the doctor. If you get the right drug, then you're cured. If you don't get the right drug, your body may build up immunity so that you can't even use that drug in the future. So we've just got to be more strategic and how we plan for this. And again, the schools are trying to do the best they can.
They are. We all agree.
Right.
We all agree.
Sometimes it's just they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah, and that's very well said. Howie, you work with school districts all over the country with your Project Achieve and what you do. Again, you're a well-known school psychologist. Okay, when you go in and talk to us, by the way, we have to leave in a couple of minutes, but when you go in and talk to a school district about these exact same things, and I'm kind of playing the devil's advocate here as the host. What's the top question that they ask you as you tell them what you've told our audience today?
A lot of times, honestly, is...
Yeah, well, how much does this cost? The basic question is how much does this cost?
No, answer that question.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're on the behavioral side of things, it's how do we get these kids to behave? And, you know, because they want the kids to be academically engaged and to be happy and interactive and so on.
Of course.
And again, you know, yeah. And so, I mean, sometimes that's the beginning of a discussion where I talk about, well, there's a difference between a discipline problem and a behavioral problem. Because if a student is coming from trauma, let's say, legitimately, that's not a discipline problem. That's a behavioral problem. But what the school wants is, what do we do to get this kid to behave? And again, sometimes, you know, part of the issue is I've got to get the schools to realize, not most of them, okay, but it's a collaborative effort. It's not just student. It's we've got to wrap around our kids. And we've got to reach out, obviously, to the parents, the guardians, the community.
We really do, and it's actually interesting. A good friend of mine, a company called Gaggle, they just sent me a press release. I don't know if you know them, but they deal with mental health in schools, and they were this is interesting. They're having a webinar. I just put it up on our website, to announce it on October 10th. All right. But one of the people that they invited to be one of the panelists is the director of community relations and public relations for a school district. Okay. And that reflects what you just said. Okay. It struck me when I saw that as one of the panelists. You'd think they'd have all psychologists and counselors, but no, they had a director of school district communications there. It reflects back to what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that you have to have everybody involved in this.
Right.
Okay,
it's
that simple.
Whatever
school district it was, I can't remember, but it's up on my website on the press releases, that webinar.
Right. I mean, we're all involved in the academic part of the ledger. We've got to be involved in the social, emotional, and behavioral. And again, I'm not saying that schools are not, but schools are more comfortable and sometimes more expert on the academic side than the social, emotional, and behavioral side.
They got to be. We got to make it all runs together. It really does. We got to go, Howie. I love having you here. Hey, send me that blog post. We'll get it up for you. Okay. It's different. We can put it in the magazine. Okay. Well, let's look at it. All right.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. Thank you, my friend. You have a great weekend. Where are you today, by the way? I know you were flying somewhere.
I'm outside of Atlanta today.
Is it hot? They've had a heat wave, haven't they?
Oh, it was like 98 degrees, and that was the temperature.
Oh, brother. Get cool. Go back home to Arkansas. Okay?
All right, thanks. All right, take care.
Be good, my friend. Have a good weekend, and thank you.
All right. You too, Larry. Thanks.
Thanks, buddy. Bye-bye. Howie Knopf, everybody. Okay, Project Achieve, check it out. All right, he's a great guy. Okay, KNOFF. All right, and I will get that article. We'll put it up on site over at ace-ed.org, okay, which is our magazine. Go check it out if you haven't seen that yet. Okay, check it out if you have seen it. There's plenty in there. All right, and we're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. My name is Larry Jacobs. We'll be back on Monday, all right, with some great shows all week. Check the website. We'll put our new schedule up probably on Sunday. You guys have a great weekend. Thank you, Howie, everybody. Thanks for listening.